Welcome back to the Hockey House Pod, episode number 158, presented by Selle Hockey Co. I'm your host, Alex Herman, as we bring you all the latest news from the ACHA and club hockey. As always, a busy, busy week in the ACHA. A lot of awesome storylines, big-time matchups, great highlights. Finals week here at Adrian College, I'm sure. December breaks are starting for some places. Trucks, I know that you're on break. Dev, you're in Florida, so you're always on break. But how's everybody doing this week? Let's check in.
Pretty good. Good to be back. Was getting over being sick last week. Great job holding it down. It was a fun weekend. Went over to Tampa. Got to call some games for the Spartans, and they played UCF and USF. That rink they play in is giving me flashbacks to the frozen ice box, we used to call it, in Martin Ice Arena, because due to Hurricane Milton last year, they had some problems with their ventilation, and I guess it made the rink a lot colder. It's showing its age. The sliding doors wouldn't work when I tried to walk in there. Entranceway to get in there was a maze. You had to walk through like tiny corridors. We got to call the games, and they were great. Before the last game got wrapped up, there was like 40 seconds to go. We had USF down by a goal. The power surged. Everything in the building like flickered and went out. Now, that's not a big deal to people on the ice, but for our broadcast, everything went kaput, and we were down for, I don't even know how long, 2, 3, 4 minutes. In that time we were down, USF scored the tying goal with 9 seconds left to take it to overtime. They decided in a shootout. The reason I bring that up, 2024, me and Reagan Cleese called the M2 ACHA National Championship game, Indiana and Miami, Ohio. That game went to overtime in dramatic fashion, but Flow Hockey turned off the stream in the overtime intermission. They couldn't get it back up until the goal was actually scored for the national championship. And it just gave me flashbacks to that moment being like, oh man, like we missed like the biggest goal of this game. So nobody's fault, nothing you can control on the Tampa side. Thanks to all those people, Carter Haynes and Tampa, for having me out. But I just had Vietnam flashbacks of that. But Trucks, what's going on in your world, man?
Yeah, I drove out to Charlotte. My dad lives out here, so I'm out here working for him. Shout out Mother's Comfort Food and Cocktails. If anyone's ever in the Charlotte area, go check it out. Skating with the Charlotte Rush out here. Lucky enough to connect with Trevor Jewell, who coaches that team, and he lets me skate with them. Good, a little bit relaxing, a little bit of skating working, so can't complain. Break's pretty awesome. Alex, what's going on over there on the Adrian campus? Your last little week going on. I know finals probably aren't very fun, but what else is going on over there?
Today is a very important day for Adrian College campus, and I started to talk about it before we were recording, and now I can finally give you guys the answer. But today is bingo night. And let me explain to you what bingo night is. So we have one dining hall on campus. It is the Ritchie Marketplace. And attached to it is a room called the Tobias Room, which is like an event hall. So like there are people who use it for like large conferences. People do weddings there. Like it's a big ass room. The entire campus shows up to this room. There's donuts and pastries and coffee and food and stuff. It is a campus-wide multiple rounds of bingo for legitimate prizes. And it gets so fucking intense, I have to tell you. Like, if you get a bingo and somebody else also gets a bingo at the same time, you have to sprint from wherever you are to the front of the room to try and be the first one up there to solidify yourself in this. And if there's like 3 or 4 people, you go through like a round robin of rock, paper, scissors. And last man standing in these rock, paper, scissors rounds wind up winning whatever prizes. It's not like, you know, like a $15 Amazon gift card. We're talking about like TVs, iPads, Macs, speakers, like real legit things that you would want. People boo, people cheer. There's like different variations of bingo. Like they'll do a game where only the seniors can play. They'll do a game where you have to fill out your entire board first, or like a diagonal or vertical only thing. If you go up there and you think you have bingo and somehow you're wrong, you will get booed to your seat from the time that they tell you that it's wrong to the time that you sit down. Today is a very, very important day. I have never won in bingo before. I've gotten so close on a number of times. We normally film an ACTV video with this where we ask people like, what's the craziest thing you would do to win one round of bingo, which typically elicits some pretty funny responses, but I don't know why it wasn't on our calendar this year, so we'll have to do it in the spring again when we do spring bingo. This is a big deal, and I'm a senior, and I swear to God, if I don't win one round of bingo, somebody in the ACHA is going to feel my wrath.
What's a bigger deal to you, beating Liberty or winning bingo night?
Okay, well, see about that. Beating Liberty is like a team thing and a school thing that everybody kind of collectively chips in on. Winning bingo is like an individual, like, this is like winning the Nobel Peace Prize. Like, if you win a round of bingo, you're the man just for yourself, but you are hated by the entire school. So it's, I don't even know if I can compare it.
Now, when someone says I go to a small school, this isn't even an major. When someone says I go to a small school, I don't think I've ever heard anything more small school in my life than bingo night is the biggest night of the year. It's hilarious. But I don't think you can get more small school. You do that at even ISU. We're not that big of a school. You pull bingo night out. Everyone's like, what the hell are you doing? I'm all for it. Throw me in some bingo. I want to win some shit. Let's do it.
The best part about it, too, is like they always do it late at night. So start time is 9 p.m. And if you want to be 100% sure that you get a table and a spot, like you have to wait outside of this building for an hour in the freezing cold. And right now, just so like you understand, there's going to be people who are lining up as we're doing this recording. It is currently 20 degrees in Adrian. And the wind chill is colder. And people will stand out there for an hour like they're camping out for the new iPhone.
You guys treat bingo night like North Dakota students treat their hockey teams. You guys are intense out in the negative 10 degree weather.
It's a big deal. So we'll get into our lead story for today. We had upsets, big brawls, controversial games. It's just another week in the ACHA. However, we talked about it last week. And I have to say, I'm going to have to eat my own words on this. And David Herman, our illustrious executive producer, is probably giggling to himself as he's editing this right now. But the Ohio University Bobcats swept the number one ranked Niagara Purple Eagles. Ohio hands Niagara University and head coach Tom Aradian their first and second losses of the season as the Bobcats improved to 18-3-0. In Game 1, Bobcats allowed Niagara to score the only goal of the first period before they roared back with a highlight reel pair of goals from Noah Holt and Drake Alberts. They would go on to score 4 unanswered goals and take Game 1 by a score of 5-2.
I got to join on the eat your own words train. Last week, I was kind of hard on Ohio, how they play at Showcase. I didn't think Niagara was going to walk in and have easy games, but I thought for sure they were coming in and winning. I was wrong, not even close. Seeing the 5-2 score Friday night, I was like, oh, instantly. I was like, oh, I'm completely wrong. Eat my own words. And then see them come in Saturday night, I was like, ooh, wrong on that one. Wrong plenty of times, but definitely wrong on that one.
Game 2 was a lot closer, but it was Ohio that really controlled the pace of play, and they wound up winning that game as well. That would be a 3-2 win in regulation. We had our eyes on this game last week. At one point in the season, Ohio was number one. They're in the hunt this year to try and make a big push into nationals. Niagara is doing great. You know, you make it to December to only lose your first game. That's pretty insane. This was a really, really good series, and there's still more to come from these two teams as the season progresses.
Yeah, this is great in the fact that Ohio lost 2 games out in that Chicago Classic, and they came with a game plan to put together 2 of their best of this season. Niagara had 1 power play chance this whole series. At the moment, they're one of the best in the nation at this, 45.8% with a minimum of 10 games on the success rate. You think about how they were able to get a lot of shots on Jacob Dubinsky. We've talked about in the pod, could be a player of the year for Niagara in goal. They had a lot of wealth scoring. This is one of the, not just a game performance of the number one team in the nation they played well against, but they're better games overall. And the Bird Arena experience, it makes a difference. That atmosphere definitely had factors in this one, like Niagara allowing power play goals, and just what a job by everybody involved to, you know, showcase what, in my mind, is 2 teams that are going to be there near the end.
We had a rare equipment malfunction in the Midnight Madness game that wound up leading to a goal and a massive debate from the internet. The Flames netminder Conrad Kausch suffered a really, really bad break. His skate blade popped out of his skate. The puck was turned over, and it was Minot who would rush down the ice and essentially score a free goal. This created a fire on social media. Kirk Handy, coach for the Flames, had an all-time negative reaction on the bench. Minot State would wound up beating Liberty 5-0 and 4-1 to take the series. I think we got to discuss it. If you're a goalie, if your skate blade pops out of your holder, which we're seeing more frequently, not just for goalies, but for players as well, what should be the procedure to how the play continues?
I kind of see it as breaking a stick. Like, if a player breaks a blade, they're not getting the whistle blown for them to go and hobble their way back to the bench. A goalie mask popping off, I understand it being blown dead. That's a safety thing. But a skate blade, to me, is the same as breaking a stick. Like, it sucks you're the goalie doing it. I'm sure, Alex, you're coming from a goalie side of things. You might have a different take on this. Something broke. You got to kind of deal with it until you can either stop play or find a way to fix it, kind of thing.
Here's my only thought with that. Where a stick breaks, you can continue the play and play without a stick. You can also go back to the bench and retrieve a new one. If your blade pops out, there's no way for you to safely take your blocker and glove off and then put it back into the holder and continue the play without risking getting one of your hands shot off by a puck or run over or cut or anything. For me, I would say there's no way for you to safely continue that play. And in the same way that if your helmet pops off, you're not going to try and step in front of a shot, but you might because you're a goalie and we're all insane. Most of the time, the whistle would be blown for something like that. If you can't move on the ice and you're fish out of water, God forbid the puck is in the zone and somehow there's a pileup on the crease or there's somebody who's driving to the net and you need to get out of the way because they lose their balance, but you can't, and they run into you, that's a safety concern right there. So for me, there's no doubt about it, a weird gray area of where do you draw the line and say, okay, we need to stop play. Like, does it have to be a possession thing? Does it have to be, you know, like you can't do anything about it? But for me, I think I would lean more towards let's stop the play if you can justify stopping the play.
I think the justified would be that the puck went out of the zone, and you can argue that that means the scoring chance that Minot has is over. Now, they got the puck back in the offensive zone. I think it was like 7 seconds later, not even that. And they were right back into, you know, getting one towards Couch. And some would argue, I think, just reading that he could have made more of an effort to make the save. Like, his skate blades popped off. I get that he can't really move well. But, like, really what he does here is just reach his glove out and try to make the stop. You could argue that there's a number of things he could have done there. Thrown the glove, pushed the net off. I understand why the refs didn't want to blow that dead, because I think they're treating it kind of like what you're saying here, Trucks, like a broken stick. And if he can play, he's going to play it. It's just one of those weird deals of like wrong place, wrong time. And you know what? It set the tone for what this night was for Liberty. Just not their night at all, really, from start to finish. I guess insult to injury that Kalish had his skate blade malfunction and ruin any chance he had of making a stop here.
I just want to give food for thought on one thing. I don't know if you noticed which side of his body his skate blade popped off, but if you did, you would notice that it's his blocker side, his right foot. Keep in mind, the shot was to his glove side, to his left. If he was to try and push his body over to the left and throw his glove out farther than he already did, there's no way for him to do that.
So I get that point of it, but aren't you able to move your knees and swivel your way back to a center position to at least try and get in front of that? Because at least then you're forcing the Minot State player to pick his spot in the net.
You could, yes. I would say I don't think he would be able to do it fast enough. Shimmying on your pads is a smaller movement than people think. You use it kind of as a last resort. And a lot of the time that people are moving on the ice, they're pushing with their blades anyway, in sort of a half RVH. Where he was in the net, he was kind of over to that right side. I don't think he would have had enough time to get back to the middle as he's trying to figure out what's going on with his equipment.
See, but like for me with that, if I break my skate blade in the corner and something else has happened, I'm out of the play. I'm not able to participate then either. So it's kind of like he could still technically play it in a somewhat safe manner, to the point where I don't think it being blown dead is quite justifiable in the sense that it's not like an unsafe thing. I get your point where someone's barreling down and he can't get out of the way, but he could still technically make a play. Even from the video that I saw, it kind of looked like he still had a little bit of a chance to try and make a play on the puck that came in.
Let me ask you this, Trucks. If you have no skate blade in your skate, can you score?
Yeah, I mean, if you're sitting there 1 foot in front of the net, you could still score.
Let's say you blow a tire in the corner. Do you have a high percentage chance to score while you're on one knee from the corner?
No, but I don't think that's justified to blow the play dead.
No, it's not. But how many other guys are on the ice that can score versus how many guys who can defend the net?
But how many other guys can also block a shot?
What if it's a rush the way that it was?
Also,
we could play this what-if game all day long.
Yeah. I mean, we really could. I wonder if somebody said, I'm forgetting the footage, if the net was partially off, and that made it even where Conrad could not push off that right post with his hand, even if he wanted to, on his blocker's side, right? You know, there's a lot of who's nots. And I love it. I knew this would get you riled up, Alex. I knew this would get you riled up, man.
It's not a thing of getting riled up. I don't know if there's actually a right answer, because there are correct arguments on both sides where Trucks has a point to, you know, the play should continue, and, you know, the people who would defend the goaltender have points that make sense that would defend the goaltender. But we could go in a circle about this all day long, and maybe the question of the week for next week is to put the poll up and see what some of the responses are and see if anybody else has any other good takes on this, because we could talk about this for days and days and days. But we do have some more headlines to get through. Trucks, you have one more thing.
By the way, I already know through all this, my two goalie roommates are going to come after and attack me for everything I just said. So I'm fully expecting 12 texts once this thing goes out. And just, I agree with nothing you just said. Can't wait for that.
If they call you dumb, they're going to call me dumber. So I think we're both in that pool right now.
Goalies, stick together. I will side with your goaltenders. Anyway, we have some headlines this week. Maryville traveled across the border to take on Simon Fraser University and beat their non-conference team 4-1. For anybody who is unfamiliar with Simon Fraser, it's a Canadian university that fields two hockey teams, one in the British Columbia International Hockey League and another one that is considered non-conference and competes primarily against NCAA Division I schools as well as U Sports. We have seen them play some ACHA teams in the past. I had the pleasure of seeing Simon Fraser take on our Adrian M. D1 Dogs a couple of seasons ago. They play some D3 teams in there as well. This is a big deal. An M1 ACHA team beating a roster with a, I guess you could call it, higher rated players. You know, there's some NCAA Division I guys, WHL, BCHL guys, and they backed it up with some quality performances in both games, and it serves as another exhibition win for the ACHA. So the other part of it too, and was one of our questions from our chatter from the crowd, is maybe Maryville is truly capable of competing against stiffer competition and their ambitions of fielding an NCAA hockey team.
I see a lot of people, we had a couple people in our comments when we posted about this, trying to put down the fact that Simon Fraser is a non-conference team. A lot of people try and act like they're something less, like, hey guys, this is an NCAA team. A lot of people try and throw it down just because they see it happen, and I think it's wrong to do that, because, hey, this is a massive win for Maryville. It's a massive win for ACHA as a whole, because it's just, we're seeing more higher level teams go against each other. And that's kind of what the whole NCAA versus ACHA thing has always been about, is we want to prove that we're capable of beating these teams, even though everyone thinks that we're something less because we're the ACHA.
That's the key part too, Trucks, is you think of ACHA on the surface as less than that. And this just points to the fact that Maryville has the NCAA ambitions, maybe not as swiftly as Arizona State found success, or I guess more recently we can talk about Lindenwood, but I think they're going to be there. And I think you can take this to your athletic department and say, look at how we competed against the school that takes on the opponents that we want to face, and look at how they match up in the games that they've won. I think I saw somewhere that, you know, this team has beaten Alaska Fairbanks, right? So just a good opportunity, and for John Hogan and that group, I think they're going to walk away with the best feeling of, we not only won that game number two, but both games we backed up their performances. We proved that these guys that were technically better than us on paper, really we can match up with well.
Another headline story, ain't no love in Oklahoma. UCO and the Sooners got into a massive skirmish in the first 3 minutes of their game on Friday. This all kicked off from UCO forward Brandon McDonald colliding with the Oklahoma goaltender Brendan Forden. The hit happened as Forden came out of his crease to play the puck at the hash marks, where McDonald appeared to slightly leave his feet and catch him with the shoulder up high. OU answers the bell. And then the real Donnybrook ensues. We saw footage of that. It was absolutely insane. Every year these two teams play each other, there's some kind of fireworks in the matchup.
Let us fight in college hockey. Let us fight in college hockey. I will stand by that statement my entire life. You would get to see this every weekend. Every rivalry weekend would just be mayhem. I get it why they don't do it, but let us do it. It would be so much fun. You'd get so much more content, so much more aggressiveness, and let us fight in college hockey, please.
I think what was coolest to me is it was right at the beginning, and everybody in that building has all the energy. Like, these two teams hate each other. They play for the right to have their logo at center. You know, they play at the same rink, Arctic Edge Ice Arena, and it's been highlighted in the past how UCO really controls this series. You're just seeing all of that boil over, and UCO gets the better of Oklahoma in this series, but not without this being the highlight. And how about the engagement this week? Like, this was one of the most, like, hell yeah, I love hockey posts that I think we've put out in a quite a long time.
I loved seeing the footage from this. I mean, I'm going to stand with Trucks. Let us fight in college hockey. And it's funny that he mentions that. I think there was an Arizona NCAA video of some sort where they were talking about fighting in college hockey, and they said that they wanted to do it. I don't see why there's a reason why you shouldn't. And the other part of this too, staying on the physical side of things, if we're gonna let guys fight, why are we not introducing hitting for women? It's time. Like, it's part of the game. I'm very close with a lot of the girls who play on our Adrian teams here at campus. They all say it all the time. There should be hitting in women's hockey. But that's besides the point. That's a completely separate topic that, again, like the skate blade thing, we could talk about for hours. In that series, UCO would go on to win game 1-4-2, and then in the second game, they would take the weekend with a 4-3 win. These two teams will play against each other again with a pair of games in late February. We'll get through our highlights to remember. We had Matt Klein going through the legs against a host of Montana State players. Absolutely filthy backhand through the legs, top shelf. Really entertaining series in the Brawl of the Wild, which is Montana and Montana State. Huge rivalry between them. Montana State would wind up taking both of those games 5-4, 6-4. We had the Purdue captain beating the buzzer against their rival Indiana. Captain Ben Toby scored the game-winning goal for Purdue as time expired, securing a 5-4 win over Indiana. The M3 Boilermakers are 15-5-1 on the season and lead the Indiana Collegiate Hockey Conference. We had the Aquinas goalie taking a seat in the stands after the Saints were up big against Ferris State in, I don't even know how to pronounce that, Eulingben?
Oh, you don't know how to pronounce Avaglavin?
What?
Dude, have you ever been to Ferris?
No. David, no. Keep this in. Keep
what?
This in.
You've never gone to Avaglavin? You've never gone and played Ferris State? Well, no. I guess they are the M3. No. No. Or like, know anybody. Okay,
Hold on. Yes. For anybody who needs the context. Mr. Devin Sarah, I want you to pronounce the word that I'm reading on my screen right now that is spelled E-W-I-G-L-E-B-E-N for me one more time so I can fully process what I just heard. Go ahead.
It's pronounced Avaglavin. Now,
it's not.
The W
it shouldn't be.
Is somewhat silent. Okay, Reagan Cleese, if he listens to this, will absolutely chuckle because he put me on this. I was like you. I pronounced it at one point, you were Glebian. And he was like, that's not even remotely close to right. Take it from somebody that got reamed for saying it the wrong way. It's a hard name. It's probably the hardest name in North America to pronounce.
I just need to pull up the replay of the Let's Do That Hockey SNL sketch where Chance the Rapper is looking at Brady Shea's jersey and is like, it's a vowel, an adjective, and something else all together in one. Yeah, I'm not even going to try that. I'm not even going to attempt that. And I'm an announcer. And you gave me the pronunciation. I'm not even going to try it. I'm going to provide my own commentary on the video. I have never myself watched a game not from the bench in my equipment. I'm not really sure how to take that one. I would not recommend it. It doesn't sound very comfortable. Yeah, not going to try and pronounce that word. It's not happening. We talked about this clip in the group chat probably for an hour. This is so ACHA clip. So in one of the wildest games that you're going to see in M3 play all year, we had two big fights break out late in the WashU tilt against Illinois State. The ISU goalies were involved in both of them. At the end of the game, Nate Miller would wind up scoring an overtime winner, and then after some jawing and instigation, which was pretty clear as day, from the WashU celebration, it turned into a full-on bench brawl. Everybody was off the bench. Players were chirping at fans. Security was there to hold sections back. This one got really, really ugly and way out of hand.
A little bit of backstory on the tensions on this one. Basically, it was if ISU were to sweep the weekend, they clinched their conference. Tensions were already built up as high as possible because there's so much on the line for them. Washington was one of the only teams that could catch them points-wise. So it was basically, if they went out, they win their conference. I believe it with the security having to hold guys back at that rink when the away team's coming off, the fans are right there in you. So our security team after every period has to basically push everyone back. And when you're in OT, sometimes doesn't happen exactly as planned and mayhem breaks out all the time.
Trucks, I'm going to bring up one of your comments from earlier. Don't know if you said this, and don't quote me if I'm wrong, but let us fight in the ACHA. Let's do it. Bring it on.
Let us fight in the ACHA. I will die on this. Let us do it. Let us wear visors. Let us fight. Let us play hockey. We all do it in juniors. Everyone that's played juniors has all been in that scenario. Not everyone has to wear a visor if they don't want to, but let us do it. Because I think that would actually drop the amount of bigger fights that will break out. You'll just have two guys drop the gloves and beat it out then instead of these entire line brawls. So I think it might actually clean up certain things from that standpoint.
And for the ACHA officials that are listening to this right now, just remember, we're not the NCAA. We do our own rules. We do it our own way. And I think it's time. I'm going to go out on a limb to say, too, if for some reason Trucks and I are playing against each other somehow, if I decide to do a fifth year, and there's the opportunity for us to throw down Trucks, we're doing a little hockey house matchup. I'm just saying it now.
I will meet you at center ice, off the draw, off anything. I will eat a blocker just to do it. I will.
I'll take my blocker off. Like, we'll make it fair.
You got to start it somehow. Got to get a little dirty off the start somehow.
We have our stick taps for this week. We had Loyola Marymount University holding their annual teddy bear toss game against USC, fit with the specialty candy cane jerseys to commemorate the event. Those were absolutely beautiful. The fans flooded the Toyota Sports Center ice sheet with teddy bears and stuffed animals after their first goal of the game. They set a new record with 1,230 bears on the ice. Love to see a good old-fashioned teddy bear toss. It's been a trend over the past couple of years for teams to do it. Goes to a good cause and something that you love to see no matter what. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the teddy bear toss for a hockey game at any level beats out the silent night game that we see with that basketball team whose name I can't remember. But that's my hot take. Don't come after me for that comment. We had the Pokes meet the GOAT. We had Oklahoma State, as we know, always in the news. Their players had a chance to meet the captain of the Pittsburgh Penguins in Sidney Crosby after the Pens and Stars game just a couple of days ago. That's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for the boys, and they actually gave him an OK State sweater. We had our executive producer, David Herman, comment with the Hockey House account, which was, we got Sidney Crosby taking photos with the ACHA before GTA 6. Accurate, relatable, completely true. Still pretty cool that they got to meet him, and I'm sure they got to ask him a couple of questions before he had to get on the bus or head home. With that, this week's guest is brought to you by Selle Hockey Co. We got a chance to talk with Union College senior Ryan Geiger. It's here, and it's back better than ever. The Hockey House podcast collection is live. By popular demand, The Hockey House is bringing back the classic original logo design hoodie and is introducing a brand new retro design in both a hoodie and a crew neck. Do not sleep on the beanie either as we get into the cold winter months. I know that I'm going to need a new one, so I'm going to be checking that out probably after we're done recording this. Matt Pfeffer did an awesome job getting everything up and running. Thank you to him for all of the help bringing the Hockey House Pod merchandise back. And yes, if you're wondering, you can still get your orders in and shipped in time for the holidays. Head to 614hockey.com. and search for Hockey House Podcast or head to the link in our Instagram bio to see the newest releases.
And go along with this merch drop, we have a Neil Broughton signed USA Hockey 80s Miracle on Ice jersey. There's no purchase necessary. The rules are you got to like, follow, tag three friends, and this live drawing will be December 13th. We'll be picking the winner then, so keep your eyes out and good luck.
Be sure to get your entries in. That is a sweet piece of hockey history that you are able to own if you become the lucky winner. Now, let's turn it over to Geigs. We're pleased to be joined by Union College senior forward, Ryan Geiger. Geigs, how's it going, man?
Alex, thanks for having me, buddy. It's going good. Enjoying break, so it's good to be at home, just kind of taking it easy, spending time with the fam right now.
Nice to be on December break. I know mine is coming up at the end of this week, and I'm excited to have a little bit of time off. And your home is a little bit familiar to my home, and this is crazy coincidence, but from the same neck of the woods that I'm at in Westchester, New York. Of course, you're up in Bedford. I grew up in New Rochelle, which is
yes, sir,
just down the street. Crazy to find somebody else in the ACHA that's from that area, and it's awesome to have somebody represent that part of the state.
Yeah, good shout. I couldn't agree more. Obviously, 914 represent. If you know, you know. Growing up in this area, like obviously, you know as well as I do. Also, hockey's really big down here and just, you know, rinks all over the place. And youth hockey culture growing up, everybody knows each other. And there's some good rivalries even in the 914, you know, within the county. So it's a good spot to be from.
I think the crazy part is it's very possible that you and I played for the same organization for youth for a certain amount of time growing up. Were you with the Westchester Vipers at all?
Yes, I was. That's very funny. It's very funny that you mentioned that. I think you might have been a little older, but I mean, Pellegrino Senior, you know, Pellegrino family, shout out the Westchester Vipers org, you know, that's the humble upbringings right there.
It's funny you mentioned Jim Pellegrino Senior. My dad, literally a week and a half ago, sent me a text message of him and Jim Pellegrino Sr. in a grocery store because they ran into each other in public. And that was one of my original hockey coaches. So hearing that name brought up, especially in this context, is pretty crazy. The other thing that I have to make sure too, especially being a guy from New York, I'm hoping you're not an Islanders fan.
You would be hoping correctly. I am not an Islanders fan. Thank God. Rangers all the way. I'll bleed blue forever till the day I die. So go Rangers.
Perfect. Okay, so we're going to get along just fine for the rest of this interview. And part of this whole reason why this is happening is because you were able to meet David Herman, our executive producer, recently at a Working in Hockey event. Talk about the strong club hockey connection from across the industry.
Yeah, I mean, club hockey is connecting people from all walks of life. It didn't even cross my mind that, you know, something like club hockey could kind of be like a connector like that. You know, Dave was just doing his thing, networking with the Hockey House Pod kind of, you know, being talked about. I heard it come up and, you know, then I just kind of bumped into him wearing a sick jersey, mind you, too. I forget what jersey he was wearing, but it was pretty steez. We started chopping up about it and, you know, those club hockey roots, they run strong.
Now, being out there from New York, growing up there, what made you want to go to a smaller school and kind of stay somewhat local out at Union and kind of stay in that area?
One of, like, the main appeals about Union is just, like, the family feel. A lot of people would say, like, oh, you know, going to a school with, like, just around a little under 3,000 students is not the same vibes as, you know, Michigan or Michigan State or these Big Ten schools that, you know, have that kind of football rah-rah scene, you know, which, let's be honest, there's a lot of appeal for that. But I think there's also a lot of appeal for some, you know, tight-knit, smaller communities. And I think one thing I like to say a lot about Union especially is, like, when you go to Union, you know, like, right away that, Like, it's a small school, but with that big hockey school feel. You know, it's everything hockey all the time with the D1 program, like the history of that program and the national championship. You know, there's always been like a just hockey, you know, culture of excellence, if you want to call it that, at Union, I think. And just it goes back so long. They made the trip from basically not being a team at all to getting D3 affiliation in the 70s and 80s and then making that jump to D1, I think, in the early 90s. So it's kind of been a long time coming. And, you know, it's also huge for our club program, too, just everything. I'm sure we'll get into it with the new rink and stuff. But I would say hockey, definitely a big appeal, just, you know, having that small school feel. But also, you know, everybody comes out to the games, has a good time. And I think that's what it's all about.
Now, was that the only school you were looking at, or was it kind of like you knew right away that you're going there, or did you kind of pounce around looking at other places at all?
My dream school back in the day was UC San Diego, so I wasn't really ever thinking of even really staying on the East Coast. I was really open to going wherever, and I actually have family. I didn't get to tell you this before we started recording the epi, but I have family in La Jolla Shores, so outside of San Diego. Beautiful area. Just been going since I was younger and visiting them ever since they moved there. I love that area. It's, you know, it's easily one of the best places in the United States to be. So, but yeah, I definitely was interested in going to school out in California, but you know, things fell through. Tough to get in there. I got deferred, and then I think I got a rejection from there. But I got into, you know, those other UC schools. When you apply to those UC schools, you apply to, you know, all of them at the same time, more or less, just because it's all under one application. Once I didn't get UC San Diego, I started looking other places and kind of looking on the East Coast and just closer to home.
Now, was it the hockey that pulled you in, like playing either club at the time? I don't know if you guys were AAU or ACHA at the time, but was it the club side of playing hockey there, or was it kind of you're going there for school, or what kind of drew you that final decision on that?
Yeah, I mean, definitely school. Like, I came from like a science background, believe it or not. And one of the funny things that like Dave knows is that like I have a completely different background now. I do hockey content full time and social media for Union. You know, the transition basically started halfway through school, but I came to Union because I thought that I was going to be a mechanical engineer. They have a great engineering school at Union. They invest in a ton of money into it, have a ton of resources. And, you know, those kids who are graduating are getting great jobs. And I think I saw that coming out of high school, and I really wanted to do that and eventually go into aerospace and stuff. But once I saw the hockey appeal and like how I could make hockey more a part of like what I do at school, I jumped on that opportunity. Best decision I ever made. You know, it's always been there at Union, and I think it just came to me a little bit later on in college. So I never thought it could really turn into something more.
Now, you've been through 4 years at Union. You're soon to be wrapping up. You have a lot of stuff going for you. And aside from hockey, we'll talk about the video creation stuff that you were sort of alluding to a little bit before. But tell me about your overall experience from freshman year till now, playing hockey, getting the combo of being able to do some digital media stuff as well.
The journey has definitely been like one that is like so fun. Just like for me coming into like club hockey as like a freshman and throughout my freshman sophomore year, like I was so much worse than I am now. And I think it's funny how like some guys continue to like develop and get better when they play like club. And I think that was something for me, like as I like had these kind of summers, you know, the past 3 summers, I've been, you know, jumping out, getting on the ice every day. And I think that was like something that motivated me too, to just like be better, because there were guys who were so much better than me in freshman year and sophomore year. And, you know, we had just such a stacked team, and like, you know, I was nothing compared to the top guys. But like to see over time how like as you, you know, get older, you know, you have more of a role, just more responsibility and stuff. And we take it super like, you know, lightly at Union. Like we'll kind of get into that too. There's some funny stories and stuff. At the same time, we love to win. And I think like we've always had a winning culture since I've been here. You know, the team has honestly dominated most of the time that I've been here. And, you know, just honestly, this season recently has been just kind of a little bit more of a struggle going from the AAU to the ACHA.
Now, was there a recruiting process at all with the team as far as you finding out that you would be able to continue your playing career at Union?
Yeah, so I think something that's just like, again, this might be a little more, I mean, I'm sure other schools have club fairs, right? But think of it like this, like, you know, they put out a big white tent on our lawn, on our main quad outside this building we have called the Knot, which is like a historical landmark. So, you know, just basically a couple thousand kids throughout like a 3-hour period are at the club fair. And so our recruiting is essentially just a stand at the club fair We do it nice and old fashioned. We get a poster going. We put jerseys up, the hardware up, you know, whatever we have. And we just basically meet guys, you know, do a little bit of networking with the freshmen. And the, you know, the idea is we get the students who don't know about the club to kind of start being more interested in it. And then from there they sign up and, you know, they come out to the first couple of skates. We have like a coach calls it like a mini camp, but we just really more or less have like four or five practices before like our first game. So we get a little good week of ice before our first game starts. And, you know, that's, I guess, when you kind of find out who's going to kind of skating with the team and who's not going to be skating with the team.
Really, as you were getting to school, you weren't really thinking about potentially playing. Maybe you knew that there was some club hockey options, but it was kind of just show up and you found out and it was an added bonus.
I was basically, the skates were hung up, you know, like as far as I'm concerned, the skates were hung up. I didn't even bring my gear, you know, it was another door that opened. And like, you know, all of us, you know, as teammates are super close. And I mean, like, I'm so thankful that I'd have no way of knowing it if you don't go to the club fair and you don't kind of, you know, get your foot in the door and just, you know, kind of be there and show up, then, you know, you would never really know about it. But it's just one of those great things that, you know, has been going for a long time at Union and makes some lifelong friends for sure.
I think that speaks really to the diversity of the ACHA too, because you see throughout the different levels and where some of the talent goes, some places are bigger programs that recruit year round and, you know, you have to play high level junior hockey or you're coming down from an NCAA program. It's cool to see that there is an avenue and a place for people who are just going to look to play hockey and have some fun. You know, the games of course are still competitive and people are trying, but you know, it's not as serious as some other places. I'm curious to hear from you too. Have you guys considered at all maybe changing up the format at all, and instead of doing the resource fair, maybe trying to go out and target some kids to bring in for the program?
I would say the seniors, at least we've joked about it and kind of talked about it in a joking kind of way, but saying like we need to start really recruiting here, boys. Like let's get on the recruiting trail. I work in the business of hockey. I know we haven't really touched on it yet, but like I know, you know, what it's like to be on the recruiting side, and it's just so important. Like, I think it really just depends, right? Because it depends on every program has different resources. It's what you make of it. And at Union, it very much is the case. Like, every team has a different kind of identity every year. It changes and it kind of molds and, you know, reshapes and stuff. And in the 4 years that I've been at school, we've been getting, you know, progressively more serious with it. And I think, you know, that tracks to like have a chance to be success in the ACHA, like when other teams have those resources, like at some point you're going to need to, you know, make an effort to go out and get players and stuff and at least entice kids to come to Union. Enticing kids to come to Union is always a good thing because it opens their eyes to just a different kind of like college experience. You know, there's still the fun, there's still the parties, the going out and having a blast with your buddies, but it's just on a smaller scale. And, you know, some would say that honestly makes you a lot closer.
So cool to hear about the different facets of your guys' program. And it's definitely the travel and part of the beauty of that is going to some cool places. You mentioned to us Lake Placid. I know you played a game out there with Paul Smith's college. So tell us about that experience and some other experiences you've had out there.
That's a great great shout, Lake Placid. I mean, you know, Miracle on Ice, it doesn't get much better than that, folks. That pretty much sums that trip up. It's just, you know, it's an absolute blast. It feels like kind of going back in time when you're there and you really just appreciate, like, obviously the history of the game as well. But I think it's easily the most fun kind of trip that we get to do. We, you know, we do a lot of traveling, like up in the North Country of New York. I think we're heading out to Mass in January. Other than that, we're, you know, we're mostly local, right? We're on the East Coast. We're not venturing super far away from school. We're usually like a 3.5 hour to 4 hours or less distance away when we take buses to, you know, on the road. You know, the Lake Placid is just one of those experiences where, like, if you get to play there, you know, like how special that it feels. And, you know, obviously watching Miracle on the bus, right? Like being with the boys and, you know, celebrating after is the best part. I've done it twice. I didn't get to go on the trip this year, figure enough, just because I had to work. The boys went up to Lake Placid. They got to spend the night. They got a nice hotel, some knee hockey in the hallway, you know, just the classic. We're doing it at every age here, folks. So
it's so funny that you talk about Lake Placid too, because it takes me back. That was a place that I played at tournaments growing up. So know the area, know some of those hotels, definitely know about the knee hockey. It's such a cool place to go. And the fact that the Olympic Village is still set up literally the same way that it was left, and, you know, some modern twists nowadays that technology has advanced since the 80s, but super cool place to be.
We read that you guys might have beat a team at a tournament with no matching gear. Can you elaborate for us about that?
Yes. That's always a good one. I think like when some guys in the ACHA think of our team, at least teams that we've played, they think of us by our like mismatched gear. And I think we get chirped so much for it, but it's honestly something that like we find super funny just as a group, because to be honest, like the guys that we end up with at Union, you know, not only are we not doing any recruiting, but they're just coming by virtue of the fact that Union's a good school and kids come for good academics. We have, you know, three lines of guys who played prep. You know what I mean? We have guys who played in the EHL, were point per game. We have like every kind of like gritty guy who's, you know, had experience like playing AAA and stuff like that growing up. So it's kind of funny. Like everyone's got like their gear still on from high school, and we're slowly but surely, guys are getting, you know, black helmets, and we're starting to match a little bit more. We got some matching socks finally this year. That's the kind of stuff that when I say like we take it more lightly, like we take it more lightly. We're definitely still out there trying to, you know, trying to go after guys, trying to make plays and put the puck in the net and like win games, because we all love to win. We hate to lose, but you know, at the same time, we take it lightly. We take everything with a grain of salt. And, you know, sometimes we're out there looking like, I don't even know, just like a Jackson Pollock. We just got, everyone's got different colors on, and you know, it's a little confusing at times. So
now we ask this question to all of our guests that come on the show. I think everybody has their own welcome to the ACHA moment where they realize, okay, I'm in the ACHA. Do you have a moment that sticks out for you as that category?
I would say like, if you know, this is our first year. For like some people who don't know, we were an AAU team. We weren't sure like what jump we were going to make into the ACHA this year, but we did it, and we're M2 this year. And I think for me, at least, the moment that I felt like, damn, this is pretty different, was when we were playing RPI. I mean, we were kind of laughing to ourselves on the bench, but a lot of these teams, they take it pretty seriously. You know, they got stuff up on the video board. They got their highlights. You know, I'm sick handling, you know, outside of our locker room pregame, and I'm watching these guys' highlights up on the Jumbotron. You know, the rivalry kind of feels real, and like a moment like that, like it feels like, damn, you know, you really beat these guys. And then, you know, that ended up being a game for us that was honestly a pretty good beatdown for RPI. I mean, we pretty much got chased out of there, and, you know, but it was still one of those moments for us where we kind of realized like, yeah, like, you know, not only were we not playing to our best, but, you know, there's guys in this league who are really good and can, you know, they can make plays.
So aside from playing at Union, you have a very, very unique experience for a student over there. You're in content creation, and we always make it a point to shout out our content creators on the show when we see either good videos, good graphics, good photos. You work as the creative director for the NCAA program. How did that come about?
It's honestly a great little story too. So in high school, I got a camera just at a yard sale. This really nice lady, she gave it to me for free. I got a camera and some lenses, and I really started to just mess around with it. I feel like I've always been a creative person, used to be a musician, so I kind of have that creative mindset. And I started taking photos in high school of our football team, and the guys, you know, everybody on the team, students and stuff, really loved, you know, those Google Drive albums and just kind of grassroots giving people photos. And, you know, it was fun for me because I saw that like other people could, you know, appreciate the work. Freshman year at Union, I, you know, the long and short of it is I took that camera from high school, that same camera, and brought it to one of the men's D1 games. And I just started shooting. I just started taking pictures, trying out video, just doing it because not only I love hockey, but I also love, you know, taking photos and photography. So before warmups were over, one of the assistants was walking at the time. This is Lenny Childs, and he's now the head coach out in the Knoll in Janesville. Lenny and I were super tight, and he was one of the reasons why I was able to kind of get in and have the opportunity, because he saw me doing it and he said, you know, are you a student? Like, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, I'm really sorry. Like, I didn't know, like, I don't have a press pass, because I thought he was about to rip me. I was just there taking photos. And he said, no, like, I'm the assistant coach. Like, how would you like a job? And I was like, that sounds pretty cool. We met after the game, and, you know, it was just one of those things where they were like, we want to see like what you can do. Like, we really, you know, at the time they really needed, you know, content. They needed any content. And, you know, I think that they start to see other schools, you know, having these creative departments and the resources, and, you know, a lot like the Hockey House Pod, you know, the Instagram following, you know, doesn't just come for no reason. It comes because of a lot of great content creators and people who make it happen. So I think the same thing, you know, needed to happen at Union. And slowly but surely, from my freshman to my senior year, I've just gotten more and more responsibility, more and more trust with the program. And now I'm just the creative director for our men's and women's program. When it comes to big projects like Media Day, you know, I have oversight over that stuff. And, you know, I think it's just come with a lot of time, a lot of patience. One thing I say to a lot of people is, like, they ask if I get paid for working. And I said, well, yeah, I definitely get paid now, but it also was over 2 years where I didn't make anything, right? And so, like, a lot of times you got to just put that time in. It's the same thing as hockey. You know, you got to keep working at your craft, getting better and being hungry and stuff. And I've stuck with it since freshman year, and it's just turned into, you know, a dream come true for me. So it's been awesome.
How much have you seen the brand change over the past 4 years? Because, you know, it sounded like you started from, you know, simple roots and bare bones and kind of figuring out your vision and the things that you wanted to do. And now it's flourished into something that's pretty important and pretty big.
Like anything, it's just like, as I've gotten better as a content creator, I've been able to kind of tweak the style of the program, tweak the vibes of the brand. When you get to kind of like influence how something feels to people, you know, especially through social media, that can be pretty impactful. You have that opportunity to get better at it. You get to see what works. And you get to say, okay, this is clearly not working. I need to make, you know, changes X and changes Y. And I think, like, that for me, being able to, like, be iterative and make, you know, updates and stuff to my style, you know, every year, changing certain things and, you know, seeing how it affects the brand has been awesome and really rewarding. I mean, I think especially this year, I just recently wrapped up a big project with Bauer. We had Bauer come out to the school. And I'm sure this is going to lead right into, you know, conversation about the new rink, which we have a new brand new $60 million rink in Schenectady. It's been a blast getting able to, you know, just being able to play in it and feel lucky being one of the first teams to play in that rink. But it's also come with a lot of work for my job. So, you know, really cool projects though coming. Also, shout out Bar Down. We're going to be having a very cool YouTube video with Bar Down come out soon. So keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, that project you had was incredible. I think it was 20 plus minutes. So much detail went into that. Just tell us about your process for making that and all of the details of that new $55 million arena that you got to share.
That project was super detailed. And for those of you who aren't familiar with what he's talking about, definitely go on YouTube and give it a watch. It's called 24 Hours at Union. It's on Bauer's YouTube channel. And it's just a full dive into, you know, all the things and the nuances and the details of our new rink, which is called the M&T Bank Center. It's down at Mohawk Harbor. So we call it the Harbor. Some of the boys on the team call it the Hawk. There's all kinds of nicknames. We'll see what sticks after the season. Yeah, I mean, that video definitely, you know, it was a long time coming, a lot of coordination behind the scenes with the Bauer team, the Bauer social team, Corwin, the absolute beauty. Shout out Corwin. What a good guy. From my side of things, I actually helped iterate the video into the final video. Owen Moy, who's one of Bauer's like lead content creators, did that whole thing and shot it as well. And he did an excellent job. And I think behind the scenes, my direction was more so saying, you know, here's how we want to capture this. You know, here's how we should, you know, kind of film this or, you know, present this, basically execute that vision and kind of bring it to life over the course of like a 25-ish minute video.
Now, you mentioned that project. You mentioned being the head creative director for the team in general. How do you balance just the amount of work that you have to put into that and then balancing playing and stuff like that? You mentioned before you had to miss a couple games just for work alone. Like, how do you balance kind of doing everything together at once?
Yeah, it's definitely, sometimes some people actually ask me that question and I don't even know how to answer. The reality is, I guess it's a little bit of push-pull. You know, I think certain things, right? Like, as sad as it is, also, like, I'm a senior and I want to play every game that I can this season, but I've also had to, you know, sacrifice some of those games and that trip that I really wanted to go on to Lake Placid, I wasn't able to, but duty calls. And, you know, like I said, when I was saying, you know, about the commitment thing for like being the creative director and getting here, you know, in this spot in my senior year, it took time. So that's one of those things where, you know, if I have to kind of spend a game or two where, you know, I just kind of have to sit it out and do my job, I'm 100% going to do that just because, you know, I think people are looking to me to, you know, kind of deliver. You know, I think I've learned to like live with that pressure now, even as a senior, just because not only am I doing all these things, but I'm obviously taking classes and stuff. And I think a lot of other things that people don't realize is, I mean, I have a new degree now, so it's called creative media. But at Union, because we have such a small school, sometimes when you don't have a degree that you, like when you want to take a degree that the school just doesn't offer, you get to make it. And so I made my degree creative media, which is a real degree at other, you know, big schools and stuff. Because it wasn't offered, I was able to go ahead and create that and pull credits together from different areas and stuff. So after being an engineer, it's been harder because I've been having to catch up on, you know, all the credits that I missed for my new major. You know, next term I'm overloaded, in the spring I'm overloaded. You know, it's been a grind to get to this point, but we're almost at the finish line. So we all graduate in June.
Your creative endeavors, man, don't seem like they have any bounds. Notice that you went and worked with SoFlo Hockey. That's something that being here in South Florida, I've come to know here. So, how much fun did you have working with those people, and what were some of the moments that you remember?
Easily, that was one of the most fun summers of my life. I was super fortunate, able to, you know, just through the union and through kind of the family aspect I was talking about before, I got really, really close with one of our players in my sophomore year at the time, Cole Codsey, who is he's the CEO and the commissioner of SoFlo of the league. So yeah, shout out SoFlo, shout out the league. It's one of the coolest things that not a whole lot of people know about, but it's starting to be kind of fly more above the radar than it was before. But Cole kind of came to me when he was at Union. He transferred in from Bentley, and he said, you know, I really, guys, I want your help with this. Like, we got to blow this up. Like, you know, this league is super under the radar, and there's NHL guys playing in it, and people don't know about it. And I was like all over it, you know. Obviously, like as a sophomore, I was hungry to take a step in my, you know, kind of content career, and I saw that as a big opportunity. Invited me to come down, and it was one of the best summers ever. I kind of involved everyone I knew. We had Bernie Parisi, shout out Bernie. He's JP Vids on Insta. He's the lead videographer at BU right now. He's doing pretty much all of their short form social content. He was formerly with the Buffalo Sabres. He's unbelievable. So we had him living down there. I was living with him. We were there for about 7 weeks, which was like the duration of how long that league goes for. For those of you who don't know, also SoFlo is a 3-on-3 league. It's a crazy league. There's like, you know, between 30 and 40 D1 guys, like 20 plus NHLers. There's NHL All-Stars. There's, you know, a crazy list of names that play in that league. And it's on a mini sheet in the summer in South Florida with the beach less than probably 5 minutes away from the rink. So it's a really cool atmosphere down there and a great organization. So if you haven't checked that out, go check out SoFlo. They have some great stuff going on in the summers.
You know, as somebody who's involved in media as well here at Adrian College, I'm curious to hear, can you walk me through typical game day with the D1 team, sort of start to finish?
It kind of depends, I think, on the setting. You know, I actually am fortunate enough to, and this is going to sound crazy because it's honestly, it sounds crazy to me. I don't even know how I'm able to do everything with my schedule, but I also go on the road with them from time to time. It kind of depends on what kind of games they are and, you know, where we're playing and how far the roadies are, but I also go on the road with them. So I will say the road games do look a lot different in terms of like a day in the life on the road versus obviously at home. But basically I'll walk you through a day in the life. On the night before, I have a game day schedule prepped. So I work with our SID, Tim Laduca. Shout out Tim. He's our sports info director, and we just coordinate all the content that's going to be coming up for the weekend. We discuss what kind of action items we want to hit, and then the main deliverables, which are like the game day. If somebody has 100 games played coming up, we have a graphic prepped and ready to go and scheduled for a certain time in our day so that as we lay out the content, we have things blocked out so we know that whatever is in this peak area of engagement. So let's say that it's Sunday night at 7 o'clock. That's the highest levels of activity for our accounts, right? So we're looking at our analytics, we're crafting up a schedule, and that's generally how I run on game days. I'm very systematic with it. The game days usually get posted in the morning, and in between that, there'll be kind of intermittent content, quick hits basically is what I call it, of content, whether that be on the Instagram story, recording kind of short clips of the guys playing sewer or warming up and, you know, doing a dyno, doing their warm-up and their stretch, transitioning right away to getting B-roll so that as I'm shooting video, I'm thinking of a shot list in my head that I can then piece back together so I can cut up recaps, I can get, you know, I can edit goal clips. So I shoot everything with that in mind so that afterwards I have enough footage so that I can put together kind of like a mini movie of each game. Occasionally I'll do recaps, but lately the short form clips have just been popping off. So, you know, sometimes less is more. And I think social media is, it's hard to predict what will pop, but you never really know.
Now, you mentioned the difference between being on the road and then at home, but for you personally, like, what's your favorite place, either playing or traveling with the D1 team for content stuff? What's one of the best, like, arenas and just places you've gone to travel to and play at and kind of deal with?
It's a hard question, honestly. I've been to some really cool old barns, and I'm gonna, instead of saying like one of the mainstream, you know, ones, because with the D1 team I've been to a bunch of super cool places. To me, like, the arenas are cool and everything, but I think the gritty, like, old time hockey kind of barns and arenas are where it's at. One team that we play, I don't know if we play them this year, but it's Jefferson. So JCC, they came over with us from the AAU. We've played them a couple times at this place called the Saranac Lake Civic Center. When you're in the bus, like, you're like, we're driving into Canada. Like, we could be over the border, we could be gone. Like, we don't know where we are right now. It's like a wasteland, right? There's nothing around. The houses, you look outside, it's like the zombie apocalypse. They're falling apart. It looks like you're in the middle of nowhere. And then you pull up to this little town. It's like the land of, I think it's like Lando Lakes, or like it's like land of a thousand lakes or something like that. I don't know what the specific region is called, but I do know that this rink is like the most old time gritty rink ever. The showers were like separated and like down the hall. So we were like freezing our asses off, walking from like the shower to the locker room and back after the game, because they were like separated. So like we had to like walk with like just a towel through like this freezing cold rink just to get to the shower. The shower was the Zamboni hose. So we were all putting our shampoo, our towels, everything on the back of this Zamboni. We got our captain standing up on the Zamboni seat. He's standing up on the seat. He's like, all right, boys, line up. Let's go. Let's make this quick. He's spraying down everybody like they're like cattle. He's spraying everyone down. And everybody's just laughing, and it was a good time, but it was pretty gritty. There was like another game going on, and like there were fans too in the building. Like there were kids giving us knucks and stuff. We were like, what's going on? And then we have to walk across, like the people see us walking in our towels, and we're like going to, you know, hose off in the Zamboni room. So that's a good story.
I don't think I've ever quite heard something like that before. I know in junior, like my last locker room that I was at in Detroit didn't have a shower in there. So we had to walk around the rink to one of the public rooms, but not having to use a Zamboni hose, that's pretty intense. We got a couple lightning round questions too for you as we get closer to the end of the interview. First one I got to ask you about, can you tell me about hanging with Logan Gent at CP Dynamo?
Jenner, yep, that's your teammate. And that's a very, very, very good question there. No, Jenner's a great guy. And you're going to have to tell me a little bit maybe after the episode, or you know, maybe give him a little shout out here on the pod, but love to hear about how he's doing. I haven't heard from him in a while, but he spent a little bit of time in Clifton Park. Shout out New York Dynamo. I also do some work for their organization, helped out with a bunch of teams there. So I definitely got super close with Jenner, and we go back like I think 2 years ago at this point. He was there, so you know he's a good kid. Yeah, love him.
All right, I got a start bench cut for you, and I'm hoping that you use the Adobe Suite Start Bench Cut, Photoshop, After Effects, and Premiere Pro.
Okay, we're gonna start Premiere Pro. That's my life. I'm gonna bench After Effects, and I'm gonna cut the last one, which I think you said was
Photoshop.
So it's tough because I'm a guy, I do graphics, I do video, and I do photo. So I use the whole Adobe suite. So you already know I'm paying $62 a month or whatever it is for all that and a bunch of storage. I would say the video side's definitely my favorite. So I have to cut out Photoshop. Sorry, Photoshop.
All right, next up on the list, we got turning down team shells from Paul Smith's guy at Nationals.
Yeah, So again, I don't know. I don't know the full story here because I wasn't involved in the story. So there's a couple of things with this, but this was AAU Natties. This was 2023, like spring of 2023 Natties. The team was hot. We were buzzing. We beat Tennessee at Natties. There was this guy, I think, and Paul Smith was, I think Paul Smith was at Natties. For those of you who don't know, Paul Smith's big rival of ours. We don't like those guys. I think there was a guy there with their team or like a dad or somebody on their staff or something. And they like offered to like buy us like shells or like give us like matching shells. You know, I think the guys just like laughed this guy off and, you know, didn't say anything to him because like, you know, That's just not how we roll. Funny enough, we actually have matching shells this year. So complete switch up this year, but we finally got matching shells through our team. But we rode all the way through that like national tournament with just, you know, a smorgasbord of different shells and pants and, you know, logos and helmets. And, you know, that's just part of it. It's part of the dynasty.
Tell me about your teammate who wore the banana costume out on the bench when you guys were making a comeback from 3-0.
Yeah, so that's Luke Johnson, aka Ferdarilla. Shout out Ferdarilla. For whatever reason, I think he hurt his shoulder. Something happened, like he separated his shoulder, did something in a game, and he wasn't playing. Or I don't even know if it was from a game, but he did something. He hurt himself. I think it was around Halloween. I think we were playing UAlbany, and we were down in the game, like 3-0. We had a couple of guys get hurt. Forgive me, like they're gonna chirp me because I think I'm telling the story wrong. But he just decided to come back, and he put a banana costume on, and we were like, "What are you doing? Like, why are you like on the bench with a banana costume?" And then I think we just started scoring. Like we just started scoring, and I think we came back and we won that game. And, you know, we were joking that it was the banana costume.
If there are any photos of that, we're gonna need it.
It probably does, honestly. I'll see if I can do some sleuthing. Maybe I'll see if I get that sent over.
All right, last one for you. Frosty's bunch of pickles quote.
Yes. So this also, again, referring back to the Natty tournament run that we made, I believe, 2 seasons ago at this point. What happened was Riley Frost, shout out Frosty, absolute dog, coming back from a term abroad. So it's finally back. It kind of turned into like a team slogan, like just calling guys pickles. We played Tennessee. We beat Tennessee. Like, you know, we handed it to Tennessee. You know, they have they're the Vols, right? I mean, they got their helmet stickers, they got their Gitch, they got their pants, they got their practice jersey, they got everything. And, you know, we just came out there and, you know, it was a dog walking. And, you know, it's kind of funny because, you know, you can chirp all you want, but you're getting beat at your own game. And then, you know, in the interview after, you know, just Frosty had to call him a bunch of pickles.
I love
it. They were just being pickles, man.
I love it. That's a term that I could see myself using in my everyday vernacular coming up. So might patent it as the hockey house word for
I like that.
We're gonna wrap things up here, but we have one more question for you. For a prospective player who's listening to the show right now, what's your one sentence pitch for Union College?
If you want to have one of the best times of your life in college and have fun but also get an actual legit degree, then come to Union and play club hockey. You'll love it. You won't regret it.
There you go. Sounds like a good time to me. And Ryan, we appreciate you coming on the show. We're excited to see what's going to happen with your team for the rest of the year. And of course, we're always going to keep our eyes on social media to see all the really cool stuff that you're going to be producing for the D1 team.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. Absolute pleasure to be on here. Hockey House Pod, the roots run deep in club hockey. So, you know, thanks so much again for having me. Absolute blast.
Great to catch up with Union senior Ryan Geiger. Excited to see all of the really fun stuff that he has coming up on social media for his content. It's going to be absolutely sick. With that, we will turn things over to our game of the week. Friday, December 12th at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we have M1 Navy taking on the number 7 ranked team in Northeast Region for Men's Division 2 in Army at John McMullen Hockey Arena, which is the home of Navy. Always a big football rivalry that we see get played every year. It transfers over to every sport between Army and Navy. This is one that we like to highlight every year. It's typically a fun one. We have some chatter from the crowd this week. Two good questions. The first one comes from an account that I don't think I've ever seen in my life before, but it comes from the Mac Murphy, who I don't even know who that is. But he says, curious to see how Northeastern M2 will survive without Matthews Arena. And for people who are unfamiliar, Matthews Arena, one of the oldest rinks in college hockey where Northeastern plays, is on its farewell tour this year. Northeastern is getting a new rink built, and with that, Matthews Arena will be no more soon to come up. And I think it's either next week or the following week, which will be the last game played at that barn. So interested to see where the Huskies are going to wind up going forward.
Now, what we've seen a lot from these newer arenas, like ASU, you see it with St. Thomas's new rink, is that a lot of the times they'll throw a secondary practice rink. So I know some people think that the M2 team will kind of struggle because they might have to either pay more to play in the big arena or whatnot. But from my guess is that they're going to have a secondary rink that they'll play most of their games on, and then maybe bigger games like senior night or whatever will be over on the big sheet. I think that's probably the most likely outcome there, but I'm not sure. They could have to end up playing all their games on the main rink, which is cool to a certain point, but it's also more expensive, so you kind of play the game back and forth of that.
Yeah, and just by looking at the renderings, like, they're going to have basketball, the hockey arena, they're going to build turf somewhere, so like it's going to be like all faceted, obviously futuristic looking. There's enough rinks, though, I feel like, in that region to suffice them if they had to go somewhere else. Granted, I'm not from the Northeast, don't know about driving distance or anything. I just know that down in Florida, Florida State has to go drive 2.5 hours just to practice and play. So if they can find a way to make it work, I think the Northeastern ACHA program will find a way too.
Yeah, with the amount of rinks that are in the New England region, I'm sure if it's not the Huskies' actual rink on campus, it will be somewhere locally. But I'll have to say, going back to your Florida comment, if I had to drive 2.5 hours just to practice, I would find somewhere else to play. But that's just me. I'm spoiled because my rink is on campus. We have our own locker room and we get to leave our stuff there. So I'm pretty lucky in the ACHA because, you know, it's not common for everybody to have their own rink. We have our other question comes from Palmer.16, who says, discrimination against small goalies who are better than big goalies. I'm going to ask Trux about this because he's a shooter. It's a little bit different for me because I have some goaltending bias. Trux, when you're coming down the rush, you're looking to score, you're on a breakaway, or you have a 2-on-1 odd man rush, you're looking at the goaltender. Do you prefer seeing somebody who's a little bit undersized or somebody who's a lot taller?
I prefer seeing someone smaller, but in a whole game sense, I mean, you kind of go back to the thing, which isn't always true, but it's usually the bigger goalies don't move as well, the smaller goalies. I think a key look at that, at least from like a NHL's perspective, as you see Dustin Wolf is blowing it up in the NHL, but he's one of the smallest goalies. It's probably the smallest goalie in the league, but he moves so well that he's able to get over and find his spots and pick up on stuff. So, I mean, personally, I like seeing a smaller goalie, but I think there's a little bit of a give and take depending on what side you're on.
As a propagator of the short person's movement, I want to say that short goalies matter because they're nimble, like you're talking about. They can cover down faster. And I'm going to reference a guy that I know pretty well down here, Rocco Bruno. He's one of the best in College Hockey South, and I think people could find out in the country, because he's still able to cover a good amount of his crease and shoulders. You know what I see out of big goaltenders that is their biggest problem? Alex, get ready to come after me if you don't like this, but bigger goalies tend to have a bigger gap between that low pad and that blocker side, at least what I've seen. Smaller guys, you don't see that as much. I feel like that spot doesn't get picked. They go for the shoulders. And I don't know about you, but I don't think a lot of guys in the ACHA have been that good at picking those spots at times. That's just my take, though. But I'm short goalie team all the way.
I think it depends on how you set up in your stance. I can hear what you're saying about the big goalie problem. There definitely can be space there at times, but you also, you know, I'm not going to compare the ACHA to the NHL because obviously we know the ACHA is better. Andre Vasilevskiy, you know, super big guy. Like, he's 6'6", I think. Not only does he cover the net, but he's insanely fast in the same way that we would see a traditional shorter goaltender be. And he plays like he's 5'0" and can just speed from post to post and fly all over the crease. So it's something interesting to talk about. But as a goalie lover myself, I will side with Palmer saying, there needs to be less discrimination against small goalies who are better than big goalies. Because at the end of the day, if you're stopping more pucks, if you have a better GAA, if you have a better save percentage, if you have a better win-loss record, I don't care what any coach says. If you're better, you're better. I've seen some pretty good small goaltenders in my time. One of my closest friends, Cam Isabel, is a little bit shorter than I am. His style was absolutely insane. There was an Adrian NCAA goaltender, Nick Talarico, who I think was all of 5'6 or 5'7, and he won a national championship and almost repeated the following year. Short goalies, give them their credit. They deserve it. We have an interesting question of the week as we get towards the end of the show. In honor of our jersey giveaway, if you guys could have any hockey jersey, past or present, what would it be and why?
I think you'll relate to this a little closer, Alex. Do you remember a guy by the name of Riley Shahan? When I was watching the Wings in their last season at the Joe, Riley didn't have a goal the entire season. I think he played like 75 games. It was like the first year the Wings missed the playoffs in like 24, 25 years. And Riley Shahan got two goals in that game. Reason I remember that, Ken Daniels' famous, he's got two. And I'll never forget that moment, considering that's the most nails guy ever. I want a jersey from the guy that didn't have a single tuck until the last game on the last year of the last moments at an arena. Not the 40-goal scorer. I have the Datsyuk. I have the Patrick Kane. But I want a Riley Shahan jersey.
Wasn't he the last wing to score a goal at Joe Louis as well?
As Mickey Redmond would say, bingo, bango. That's right.
It's funny. I remember watching a story on that, and I don't remember who the reporter was, but they like interviewed Riley Sheehan's mom, and she was talking about like how cool it was to be there in the audience and how big of a deal it was. That is a, you know, out there jersey to want to own, but I would say for the context and the nostalgia, that would be a cool one to have. Trucks, what about you?
Now, a little bit of Ducks bias, but I love, give me an old-fashioned Mighty Ducks jersey. Beyond that, something always draws me back to those baby blue Pittsburgh Penguins Winter Classic jerseys. Not a Pittsburgh fan, but damn, those jerseys will forever be one of my favorite things ever. The just powder baby blue, just something about them will always draw me to that.
Now the question is, who do you want in the back?
Honestly, probably Chris Letang.
If I could have any hockey jersey ever, I actually own. It was a gift from David and one of my close friends here on campus. Long story short, there was a Rangers goaltender back in 2014 who was only with the Rangers for a couple of games because he spent most of his time down in Hartford in the AHL. His name is Mackenzie Skapski. Truth be told, I was younger and a lot smaller than I am now. I looked eerily similar to Mackenzie Skapski because he was also a redhead and had short hair. And also was a goalie, and I thought it was the coolest thing ever that there was a New York Ranger who kind of looked like me. So he became a pretty big deal for me. And as being somebody who I think he only played two or three games, and in his first game he got a shutout, which is kind of gross, I always wanted to find a Mackenzie Skapski jersey. And if you know anything about NHL, if you're the big ticket player, you don't get your jersey sold regularly, and if you want that person, you typically have to customize it. And for me, that wasn't good enough. Long story short, 2 years ago, as a surprise, David somehow found a team issued and signed Mackenzie Skapski jersey and gave it to me as a holiday gift, which was probably one of the best presents that I've ever received. And it's hanging on my wall in my room, right next to my signed Henrik Lundqvist jersey, which was a gift from my grandfather. And that is my number one jersey that I will ever own, ever. The only way that it could be topped is if it was one of his game-worn jerseys. I think that's the only way that it gets any better from there. But I own my, like, reach dream jersey. Wrapping things up here as we get to the end of the show. Going to be a busy week in games. Boys, anything that you guys are looking forward to?
I'm glad to see Maryville taking on another NCAA opponent. I think that's huge for the entire league every time we see it, and I'm excited for them to go back-to-back like that. Have them keep pushing not only themselves, but the entire league, and I'm excited to see how that comes out tomorrow for us. The listeners already know what's going on by then.
Might be good to finally have a weekend off, I guess. Going to work on my demo reel probably, and first weekend in a while without hockey, so... Besides Thanksgiving, gonna be interesting.
There you go. Well, with the weather being colder in most of the country, except if you're Devin and you're in Florida and it's hot all the time, stay safe, be good, keep sending in your clips, keep sending in your highlights, send us questions, send us comments, send us fun things to talk about, and we'll keep it real here on the Hockey House. We'll see you guys next time. Yeah.